has been, was the longest standing owner of this professional major sports franchise in the U.S. I knew him, and some of us knew him, before he was a sports owner. And he didn't always think of himself in those terms. He was, however, always a sports nut. He loved all sports, boxing, football, baseball, all sports. He told the story many, many times about going to the 1933 World Series game at Griffith Stadium, the last time the Washington Senators were in the World Series against the New York Giants. Now, he used to go to games at Griffith Stadium by himself, and his mother would leave him before. He was always amazed that his mother, really, really protective mother, let him go to the home, because she believed his point. Just a guy who goes someplace. Okay, so he would go to games again for the board. This was the World Series. He got to the game with his order, and he went to buy his ticket, get in the game, and he said, "You can't get it, of course. It's the World Series. Senators are in the World Series." He started crying, of course. So the usher, or the ticket taker, said, "Listen, kid, and there are a bunch of other kids. Here's what we're going to do. At the third inning, okay, I'm going to turn and look the other way. All of you run over the turnstile and then scatter." Okay? And he got in. He was always that person. He never forgot that. He talked about that the last week of his life. So for all of you that knew him as this major sports figure, professional sports, that you have to call him Mr. Poland, he was intimidating. Inside, he was always the kid that got under the turnstile. Always remember the usher who led him in the 1903 World Series game at Griffith Stadium. I think that gives some insight as to who he really was. I'll give another example. My brother's name is James Edward Baldwin. How did he get the name James Edward Baldwin? Well, a few days before he was born, before he came to us when he was a boy, my father says, "Just talking to Sunday mornings. What should we name the baby?" Well, it so happened that I also was a sports fanatic, and that's the Sunday supplement to the Washington Post had on its cover. I can see it precisely in my mind's eye right now. A cover story on somebody who was a halfback for the Redskins, whose name was Jim Padola, number 24, Jim Padola. So my father and mother were sitting there and asked me, "What should we name the baby?" I said, "Jim! For Jim Padoli, of course! Guess what? That's his name. Jim Padoli, Jim Poe." Then they said, "Well, what about a middle name?" And by the way, I'm 7 years old. I said, "Well, the Redskins quarterback is Andy LeBaron. Let's call him Andy." He said, "Okay, so that's how my brother got his name. James Edward Poland, named for Jim Padoli, number 24, and Eddie Lemire, the Redskins quarterback in the NFL." That's way before he was a Poland sports owner, when he was a Poland sports man. He loved also to play sports. He loved tennis, swimming, basketball, and as Wes said, he had a two-handed set shot, old-fashioned, two-handed set shot. He shot it with a tie on, with a coconut. He always told me he could just beat you, Wes. I didn't know if it was written, but I don't know if that's really true. Either way, in any case, you know, he was giving you the advantage, because he would come with his coat and tie, his muscle suit, and he would shoot his two-handed set shot. He was great at ping pong. He was the champion of the Jewish Community Center in ping pong, and as soon as he bought the team, of course, he invited all the players over to our house to play in the ping pong, and he actually beat them. Now, I don't know how many basketball players actually concentrate on their ping pong game. Gus Johnson was so angry that he was defeated by my father that he actually stormed out of the party because he lost to this little Jewish guy. My
father's actually was a very fruitful nonetheless. He was a very successful basketball coach. He coached me in the Jewish Big Basketball League for 3 years. We won 2 championships. The year we did win the championship, I actually won the most valuable player. Now, of course, my father had people passing to me in the center a lot. That helped. Now, when he bought the Bullets in 1960, that's a long time ago, he never got over just how much fun, he had owning the team. It never occurred to him that he would give it up, and he had to, when he sold the Capitals, it was also very painful because of how much fun that was. There's many, many stories. When I look up at our 4 retired jerseys of Wes Unseld, Gus Johnson, Alvin Hayes, and Earl Monroe. I have stories from all of them. I'll just recount one of the one who unfortunately is no longer with us, Gus. So the year my father won, in fact, it was the game that Rabbi was just referring to earlier. It was a game in St. Louis. My father had just bought the team. That was when Gus Johnson was an amazing jumper. Preceded Dr. J, preceded Michael Jordan as a leaper, amazing acrobatic dunks, and he took off from basically the top of the key, maybe an inch or two before that, his arm way up, and had his windmill done, and guess what? He smashed the backboard. I think it was the first time in the history of professional basketball that the backboard actually got smashed. In St. Louis, there were maybe 700 people there. And so after the game, I said, he got really to go talk to Gus and see how Gus is having amazing athletic skill. So, remember, this is 1964, so we go into the locker room and get to meet Gus Johnson. And there is Gus smoking and drinking beer. I said, that's how you do it, Gus. Okay, I'm going to follow your example. When we won the championship, that was one of the greatest thrills of his life. My father wore the championship ring the day he died. He wanted to win another championship desperately, and the day he died, he thought, this year's going to be our year. And by the way, Antoine James and colleagues, this is going to be the year. Got to go for it. So much fun playing the role that enjoying everyone in the community. I remember, as an example, we were in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, in line at the Coors Brothers ice cream stand, and somebody was ahead of the line said, "Hey, are you ready to go?" "Yep." They said, "You're the owner of the Wizard." "Yeah." "So, well, here's my son. Can he meet you?" And he said, "Sure." So, of course, his kid is about 7. He said, "Hi, Mr. Poland." And he smashes his ice cream all over my father. And my father had to be, of course, the father. "Oh, my God. Sorry, Mr. Poland." No. "Look, you call my secretary. I'll give you 6 tickets to the game. Make sure you do that." That's what he always did. My father also always realized that being the sports owner gave him the responsibility, the opportunity, and the contributions to the community. The Verizon Center, you always heard tributes to how much the Verizon Center meant to this community. He was very, very proud of that. Affordable housing, where we offended, referred to the new project that we just built on this morning. It's going to provide 120 new affordable housing units in the city. He's extremely committed to it. He fought for it for 5 years. The night before he died, he was telling me how excited he was that we were all going to go to the groundbreaking together and that we were going to see the project through. He was going to be there in his wheelchair, in the mud. It didn't matter. The project was going to happen, and he was insisting. Abe Stable, you've heard about that, and I want you all to contribute to it, if you don't mind. It says so on the program. Abe Stable serves the homeless, the hungry, and this community. He believed in deacon and fervently thought about it all the time. His joy and his commitment to community and to treating everybody never left him. Never. You know, it's fair to say, I think it's relatively easy to be gracious, magnanimous when you're on top, as he was for a long time. Doesn't mean he had to be, but it was relatively easy. It's much harder to be gracious, magnanimous, strong, courageous when you're being knocked around. And he was knocked around his last few years. Many of us saw him lose his complete mobility by the end of his last year. He basically couldn't move at all. He couldn't write, he couldn't read, he couldn't barely keep his eyes open by the end. But that's when his true strength came out most full, most pure, and in most distilled form. And I want to tell one story about that. The last time he was in a hospital was at George Washington Hospital. That was probably about a month ago. It was one of the emergencies that he had faced over these last very difficult couple of years. Then when he got there, he was with the nurse, and he was meeting him. And she was going to give him some pills, some medicine. He said, no, 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 it's the wrong medicine, it's the wrong treatment. She said, no, this is what the doctor told me. He said, you're wrong, it's the wrong treatment. And she did it anyway. She gave him the medicine anyway, and it was the wrong treatment. And he got worse. And he was always kind of on the edge for the last several months. He got worse. He got very close to the end. But he came back. And after 2 days, he was able to leave GW Hospital. I was with him when he got out. He said, we've got to get you the hell out of here again. So he was very enthusiastic to leave. He was in his wheelchair, getting out. He said, wait. Before we go, we've got to find the nurse, Amy. I have to talk to her. I said, what? We can go. No, I have to talk to her. I said, Dad, remember, you want to go? He said, no, I'm going to talk to her. So I go out and I said, okay, where's Amy? Where's the nurse? She's on break. She's on break, so when's she going to come back? 20 minutes. I said, okay, Dad, well, let's go. We're ready to go. We can say whatever you need to say. He said, no. I'm waiting. And I'm going to wait because I have to talk to her. So he waited, even though how much he wanted to leave, and how much pain he was in the wheelchair, he said, I have to talk to him. So she came, finally, and he said, Amy, I've been waiting to talk to you, and I want to tell you that I forgive you for the mistake you made, and I'm sorry that I got angry with you for that. That was the true way to pull it under duress. Life-threatening situation, his character came out purely, most fully, most strong, and he says, Amy, you'll forgive me for yelling at you. And by the way, call my secretary, Rob, and I'd like to get you tickets for him. So when I think back on my father, all he's done, and hear all the tributes to him, I think it's fair to say that there's a lot that we can all absorb and carry with us. I think it's fair to say that the world is a better place for the 85 years.